This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. November is Men's Health Awareness Month, so Talkspace wants guys to know that being prepared for life's biggest challenges and opportunities means prioritizing mental health, too. Talkspace can help you go beyond fine-tuned workouts, supplements, and productivity hacks. Talkspace can help you fine-tune your inner life so you can succeed in being the best version of yourself in any situation. And with Talkspace, you can get therapy from anywhere and on your time. You can even text your therapist between sessions. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace takes most insurance, and most insured members have a $0 copay. Men's Health Awareness Month is the perfect time to reach out to Talkspace. Now, get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com and save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com. That's Talkspace.com, promo code SPACE80.
Okay, let's unpack this. We've got a really strange set of documents here.
Definitely strange. One part describes this incident, right? At a wax museum in 1978.
Yeah, Western Rhode Island. But then there are these other papers, almost like rules for how you're supposed to record things like this incident. Very specific kind of procedural.
It's an unusual pairing. You have the event itself and then these guidelines that seem to frame it in a particular unsettling way.
Right. So our mission today basically is to get into both. We'll look at what supposedly happened to the night guard, Matt Tress.
And then we'll analyze these documentation principles, see how they might shape our understanding of the incident itself. Pull out the key takeaways for you listening.
The way these sources interact is, well, it's the core of the mystery, isn't it? It's not just what happened, but how it's being told.
Exactly. The rules for telling the story almost feel designed to create a specific kind of dread, not just administrative guidelines.
Yeah, precisely. Okay, so let's start with the incident itself. We've got this source, the night shift at the Wax Museum. Reads like a shift log, pretty factual, or trying to be.
Sets the scene simply. Wax Museum, late 70s, quiet part of Rhode Island, Matt Tress, night guard. Standard stuff.
And for the first few weeks, apparently, it was standard. Clock in, do the rounds, clock out. Nothing much to report.
Uneventful. Routine.
Until one night, he's doing his first patrol, and he notices something. Off. The wax figures aren't quite where he remembers leaving them.
Mm-hmm. And the log notes his first thought is pretty grounded, right?
Totally. He assumes it's the daytime crew. Maybe moving things around for cleaning or setting up something new. Makes sense.
The most logical explanation, really. You wouldn't jump to... Well, something else. Not you.
No. But then it escalates. The next night, shift starts okay, but on its second patrol?
That's when it gets specific. Really specific. He walks into the main hall, and the log states, all observable wax figures had their right hand elevated, thumb extended upwards.
Every. Yeah. Single. One. Just imagine seeing that. Silent figures in the dark, all giving a thumbs up. Yeah. It's deeply weird.
Utterly bizarre. The log says he felt fear, obviously. Who wouldn't?
But he decides to stick it out. Only a few hours left till morning. And he actually starts trying to write a note, you know, for the morning staff, following procedure.
Trying to document the anomaly, use the system to report something that feels outside the system.
Like a way to cope, maybe? Record it, flag it, file it, put it in a box.
Yeah, imposing that bureaucratic order onto something fundamentally disordered.
But he doesn't get to finish the note.
Yeah.
Because then he hears something faintly. From upstairs.
The source just calls it a yell, or maybe a yelp breaks the silence.
Sudden. And despite being freaked out already, he feels he has to go investigate.
Right. Duty calls, I suppose. Or maybe just you have to know.
So he heads upstairs, cautiously, and sees something else. Something new.
A figure that wasn't there before. He knows the layout, knows the exhibits. This one's an addition.
He gets closer, confused, tries to identify it, reads a little plaque next to it.
And the log identifies it. Marilyn Monroe. A completely new element appearing out of nowhere in this fixed space.
And that's the turning point in the log, isn't it? He looks up from the plaque.
And the log says the figure jumped out at him, or maybe lunged, tackles him.
The account basically stops there, mid-struggle.
Yeah.
Just unresolved violence.
A sudden end to the recorded observation loop.
Then, the next morning, staff come in. They find Matt Tress, but he's not upstairs.
No, he's back down on the main floor. Near the front entrance.
The way they found him, it's described with that same, like, clinical coldness as the figures.
Yeah, the source notes he was sitting upright, unresponsive. Here it is, smiling with his thumbs up.
Chilling. just absolutely chilling, echoing the exact same pose as the figures he saw earlier.
So that's the narrative from the shift log, presented as fact, however disturbing.
Okay, pause. Let's pivot now. Completely different angle. These other sources, the Inspector Story Production Guide, Principles of Unseen Horror, these feel like internal memos about how to frame stories like Matt's.
Yeah, they lay out a whole philosophy. It's about horror that's suggested, not shown. Unseen forces, things never fully explained. The power is in what you don't see. The gaps, the contradictions.
And the tone they push for is interesting. Paranormal realism, they call it.
Make it feel absolutely real. Mm-hmm. Like you found classified files or lost surveillance tapes. No melodrama, no exaggeration. The realism is the horror.
Authenticity.
Yeah.
Or the appearance of it.
Yeah.
And the language is key, isn't it? They specify using these very forensic, almost bureaucratic terms.
Exactly. They list examples. Recorded, flagged, surveillance, incident report, archive, sealed. Even terms we saw in the first source, like shift log and observation loop, they fit this mold perfectly.
Why do that? Why use that kind of language for, well, for this?
It lends this weight, this official seriousness to things that seem impossible. It makes you feel like you're seeing fragments of a real hidden investigation, or maybe even a cover-up. It implies a system trying to process the inexplicable.
So the weirdness gets cataloged, filed away, even if no one understands it. And they also mention using haunting language within that dry style.
Mm-hmm. Like little chilling phrases dropped in. That tape never blinked. It suggests this weirdly persistent, maybe unnatural observation, or the last log ends with a knock. Abrupt, unresolved intrusions.
It focuses on the gaps, the silence, the sudden stop.
The silence is huge for them. Dead air is tension, one principal says. And contradiction, presenting details that just don't square up.
Like their example, the door was locked, but she was already inside, forces that mental disconnect.
Right, and it prioritizes imagery over explanation. Let the weird visuals linger. Don't explain the thumbs up, just show it again and again.
They even have specific techniques listed, psychological horror devices.
Yeah, things like memory loops, characters getting stuck in repeating or corrupted memories, makes them doubt what's real.
Or parasitic footage, the idea that the recording itself, the footage, might be harmful or somehow infectious.
And pattern logic, that's a big one. Recurring numbers, shapes, gestures, like the thumbs up appearing across different incidents or documents, suggest some kind of hidden order or intelligence behind it all.
Purpose unknown, though.
Exactly. And bureaucratic horror. Forms, memos, approvals coming from these vague, unknowable departments suggest this huge, faceless system lurking behind the individual incidents. Maybe complicit, maybe just indifferent.
So the overall feeling they're going for is that everything is connected, part of a bigger something, a system, a pattern, maybe even some kind of test.
And this idea of ambient entities or forces, things that don't necessarily show up as monsters, but that subtly corrupt or influence the environment, or people.
Which changes the questions, right? It's not just what attacked Matt Truss.
It becomes, what is this pattern? Why is reality being warped in this way? And why is it being documented like this? The documentation itself feels like part of the phenomenon.
Okay, so let's connect these two threads. Let's take the details from Matt's shift log and look at them through the lens of these documentation principles. Apply the rules to the report.
All right. Start with the first weirdness. Figures moving, then the thumbs up pose. From a grounded view, like Matt's first reaction, it's mischief. Vandalism.
Or, maybe something internal. A psychological break. Stress manifesting as delusion. Hallucinations under pressure. Possible, I suppose.
But if you apply the principles, especially pattern logic and ambient entities, that thumbs up sign, it's not random. It's a specific, repeating, unnatural pattern being imposed.
Like a signature.
Exactly. An ambient influence making its mark, corrupting these static objects in this one particular unsettling way. It fits that idea perfectly.
Then the new figure, Marilyn Monroe, appears out of thin air. Grounded explanations, really tough. A prank that sophisticated, that quick. Seems unlikely.
Hallucination is still on the table, maybe, but why that specific figure and documented so clearly?
Seen through the documentation principles, though, it fits the idea of environmental corruption escalating. The ambient influence isn't just subtly changing things anymore. It's overtly adding something impossible.
A manifestation, but still inexplicable within normal reality. It's warping the museum's baseline state, inserting something that shouldn't, couldn't, be there.
And the attack itself in the log, very brief, a yell, a lunge, a struggle, not much detail.
Which is exactly what the principles advocate, right? Focus on silence, implication, lack of exposition. The horror is in the gap, the sudden violence, the incomplete record.
Dead air is tension. You don't get a blow-by-blow. No. Just the event, the impact, the what isn't fully described, just the that it happened. Utterly wrong.
Precisely. It prioritizes that chilling, unexplained moment over a clear narrative of conflict.
And finally, Matt's condition when found. Sitting there, smiling. Thumbs up. Medically or psychologically, maybe catatonia, trauma response where the mind just snaps and fixates.
Possible, a complete breakdown manifesting physically.
But using the principles, that interpretation feels far more sinister. He's mimicking the pattern, the thumbs up. It suggests he wasn't just attacked, he was changed, corrupted.
Transformed by whatever he encountered. He didn't just witness the phenomenon, he's become part of it. Like the ambient force absorbed him into its pattern.
He's the final exhibit, smiling, thumbs up, a living or maybe not living echo of the horror.
The whole arc of the incident, log, the slow build, the unexplained patterns, the brief violence, the unresolved, haunting final image, it perfectly matches the storytelling style these other documents describe.
It starts grounded, gets uncanny, peaks abruptly, and ends with dread. No answers, just that disturbing visual, that pattern repeating.
So the incident seems to follow the rules laid out for documenting such horrors, which is deeply unsettling in itself.
It really makes you wonder then. What does it mean when the guidelines for recording reality seem to mesh perfectly with the way reality itself is breaking down? Are these documents just describing horror, or are they somehow part of its mechanism?
When the system for documenting is designed to create unease, to mimic psychological corruption, does the act of recording, of filing somehow, validate the phenomenon, or even help it spread, like the observation itself shapes the horror?
So the final thought for you, listening. What does it imply about reality when the rules for telling the story are as creepy as the story itself? When the events seem custom-built to fit this strange, forensic, dread-inducing framework?
It leaves you thinking about a world where certain horrors aren't just facts to be noted down, but maybe phenomena that actively dictate their own documentation, leaving behind only these cold, contradictory records and this lingering image of a smile and a thumbs up in the dark. Something to think about.